You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is the 2nd of January 2017, and this is the first Radio Aryan podcast of the year that we are recording this afternoon. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and of course I have my trusty co-host with me, Subal. Subal, Happy New Year to you, and how are you doing today?
Happy New Year. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Just chilling out on a bank holiday.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it, that term, bank holiday. We're letting the banks dictate to us what our holy days are. And it's also admitting that the whole country works for the banks as well, isn't it? Since if the bank closes for the day, nobody goes out to work. It just seems bizarre to me.
Well, I guess we are. I mean, either that or we're working for the stock market, which I don't personally agree upon. I think we need to get rid of it. I mean, I think the... Really, the what we should do is we should put in that there used to be something, I forget the term, but there used to be a dividing line between the high street banks and the trading banks, and it was all taken away in the 80s. They called it the Big Bang in the banking industry, and so then the high street banks, they started, you know, trading everybody's savings on the stock market and created these giant mega banks. At the very least, we need to put that dividing line in again. But really, I personally would rather just get rid of the whole stock market itself.
Well, I just think it's really offensive to call anything to do with the bank holy. And that's what a holiday is, isn't it? It's a holy day. It used to be all these different festivals throughout the year. I forget how many of them there were, but like 3 or 4 weeks worth, I think a month's worth of holy days we used to have. When the whole country would not work, and they would honor God basically, and have some kind of feast and honoring the saints and what have you. And now what we have is the banks telling us that this is a holy day, so we don't work. And the reason why it's holy is just because the bank isn't going to process anything. It's sad, really.
Yeah, it is a shame. It's kind of like we only have one festival a year, and that's Christmas. I mean, we do have Halloween, but you don't get the day off on Halloween. And you do get bonfire night, but you don't get the day off then either. But Christmas is basically the day off. And it's just such an immense, like, pressure dumped on it. I mean, it's just like such a huge, huge big deal. Like the whole of December, everyone's just thinking, you know, Christmas, 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 Christmas is coming, Christmas is coming. And then, you know, it's like, bang, then it's Christmas. And then there's this dreamy period in between Christmas and New Year, where for like 5 days, everybody's kind of like, they're kind of like still in their Christmas mode, and they're not really getting back to work because they're waiting for the New Year to really like shift a gear and get back to work. And then that's it. Then it's back to work and off you go. But it's kind of like, as a nation, we only really get together once a year for a festival, which is a shame. Especially when that festival, they're just gutting it.
Sorry, I was muted.
Just swearing.
Yeah, we're having a nightmare today trying to record this. I've forgotten how many times we've actually started recording.
This is fifth.
Fifth time. This is a good start to the new year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
Anyway, what we were going to talk about was the rise of the alt-right in 2016.
Let's do that. Let's get on to that.
The alt-right, I've already given a long spiel about this. I'll try and remember what it was that I was saying before its Skype crashed on us the first time. Anyway, yeah.
It's the Skypes, mate. That's what it is. It's the Skypes.
It is. It is.
What happened to those memes? I don't know. You had the Skypes and you had the...
Googles.
The Googles, that was it. And what was the other one?
I forget the names of the
other ones.
I don't
think the Muslims got one, did they? Were they just kebab, I guess?
Kebab.
Well, I think it's been kebab.
I think it's quite an inspired idea that people are still using it. It will affect the search terms. But Skype themselves, you know, I think they they do know that we use their we use their technology to make our podcasts. And last year they did mess around with the microphone settings. They hijacked people's microphone settings and speaker settings, and they messed around with them. And then when you tried to put them right, you discovered that no matter what you did, it was still messed up. The microphone would be all low, the speakers would be all high. And I had lots of problems with this, and I heard other people did as well. And I looked into it, and there was no official announcement made. And somewhere in amongst all the small print, it basically said that they were testing out some Generation 4 technology, which meant that Skype were going to basically hijack people's microphones and speaker settings through Windows. This is, they were going to adjust them through the Windows setting, not the Skype settings, to certain people, to hopefully to improve their experience. And what I had to do, I had to roll back to a much earlier version of Skype so that I could actually adjust the settings on my own microphone. Infuriating. But it did happen to a lot of podcasters and messed them up. But well, I'm amazed. We've been going now for over seven minutes. This is a record. This is a record for this year.
Yeah, it's a shame actually, because Skype is actually it's a Scandinavian. Well, I don't know. It's not Scandinavian. It's from Latvia, isn't it? It's either Latvia or is Estonia. The word Skype is like a Latvian word. An American company. It was established in that corner of the world. But I think who brought it? Google or something? I don't know. Somebody, some big company brought it. It's a shame with all these new tech companies. They just
Microsoft. Microsoft bought it.
That nobody's got the balls to like stick with their company. They always just end up selling off into a giant megalith company.
This is a problem with it, with these stock markets, isn't it? This Jewish idea of selling stuff off to the highest bidder. Investing using all the money made from interest to do that, rather than actual capital, proper capital, and investing that in companies, money that's actually worth anything. So you can end up with something that's typically British, a British company that's owned by people in Japan. And our nuclear industry, they've given that to the Japanese, haven't they? Or Chinese even. I did that last year.
Yeah, we've just been all our former colonies are now just buying us up, aren't they? Basically, I think they know what they're doing. It's a symbol of pride for them as well to like get the label, you know, of the country that previously conquered them. But yeah, brought up from the inside. I guess it's okay. Well, it's not okay, but I mean, it'll run for a while we're still popular, and then I guess they'll switch to China or something. I don't know. But I think there is an underlying point about business. The mentality today is it very much seems to be that people want to basically make a quick buck kind of thing. They want to establish a company, get it going, make it good, and then sell it, and then get a pot of cash and then live off the interest. So it's very much a Jewish mentality behind the business mentality of today's people. Whereas in the past, previous industrialists, they would want to start a business and then hand it on to their children and their children and their children. They had much more of a dynastic kind of mentality behind it. But now it's all just a case of do a startup, float it on the stock market, and then sell it to the highest bidder, and then get a pot of cash, and then invest that in real estate, and then just live off the rent, or just live off stock that you've got in the stock market or whatever. So yeah, it's a different mentality. And what happens is that what it means is that all these new tech companies, they just end up getting brought off by the Google and the Microsoft and et cetera, et cetera. The giant companies just absorb them all. So
and all of them are just to extend it from that. It's all about money, isn't it? It's not about keeping a firm going that creates a good product that you want to keep within the country for your people. They want to make the cheapest product possible to make the most profits. And once it goes out of the country to another country, then you know that the quality is going to go down. You look at some of the stuff that China produces. They produce copies of everything. I mean, I use electric cigarettes, and I got some coils for my electric cigarettes the other day, and even these coils, these tiny little coils that cost about £1 each, they were fake and they were poisonous, and they tasted like inhaling hairspray, where they'd obviously been made with cheap solder. The solder had come apart in it inside these coil things. But even tiny things like that, they will just try and make them as cheaply as possible just to rip people off. You hear of in China all these poisons that go into the into their children's milk that they produce over there. They've got no interest in actually producing something that they can be proud of. They just want to produce something as cheaply as possible to make a quick buck. And as you say, this goes right the way back to this Jewish system that we were talking about in the last episode as well, about how if you were going to be passing stuff on to your children, you wanted to make sure that it was better than when it was given to you. But if you're just trying to be making the most money out of it, then you really don't care about who it's going to be going on to. You just want to be making this quick profit, this quick buck. And it's not just us that are concerned about this. This is more and more people that are concerned about the way that our economic system is going, which is obviously has seen this helped with this rise of the alt-right to bring it back round to what we were going to be talking about. The alternative right, or the alt-right, that was what it was originally called, was the alternative right. And it started out just as a bit of an obscure website to do with Richard Spencer. And obviously they were nationalists, but they were a little bit more upper class nationalists than the rest, with a little bit of a different image. And once Donald Trump put in for the presidency, and we decided that he appealed to a lot of people with his policies. He's not a nationalist, but he appealed to a lot of people. And everyone that supported him and supported traditionalism or conservatism suddenly became underneath this umbrella term, the alt-right, which is something I think nationalists have wanted to have for a long time, is to have a bit of unity there. And although it's not an official group or anything like that, it's a very unofficial term, I think it's been very, very beneficial for us. And especially what happened at the end of last year, when Richard Spencer was forced to acknowledge the Jewish question, basically. And you had Kevin MacDonald speaking at the conference, talking about the Jewish question. And then at the end of it, when a few people gave the Roman salute, after that, the Jews went wild at Richard Spencer. Obviously, they've been using these gangland criminal techniques on his mother, trying to get her to sell up her property, which has forced him to, you know, admit that no matter what he does, he's going to get called a Nazi anyway. And I think last year we saw the rise of the alt-right, and we also saw Richard Spencer being put forward as a spokesman for us. And I'm quite happy to have him as a spokesman for us. I don't agree with everything that he says or does, but, you know, he's standing up for our people. He's taken a stand. He's put his face out there, and he's shown that he's not frightened of tackling this Jewish question. So I'd really like to just say that I have a lot of respect for Richard Spencer, which I maybe didn't have at the beginning of 2016. And he has become the face of the alt-right. Obviously, there are lots of other people involved in it. And also, when this happened, this Hailgate thing, it set apart the alt-right from the alt-light, and the people that were just hangers-on, that just latched onto the name and thought they would use it. People like Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson and the others. They're all looking pretty stupid now, I think. And I think more people are going to be coming to the more nationalist, hardcore side of the alt-right, especially because that's what appeals to people. It's edgy. InfoWars isn't edgy at all. It's just conspiracy stuff. And I know this. You came to the alt-right from the conspiracy side of things. So 2016 must have been quite a momentous year for you too, I would have thought, Subal.
Yeah, it was quite... Well, I kind of got red-pilled in 2015. So, but I got red-pilled through... First of all, I watched that documentary, what was it called? The Greatest Story Never Told, which I think red-pilled a lot of people. It's actually my friends in the temple. They've sat me down and forced me to watch it. And then then I think I was busy. It didn't really sink in. And then I ended up somehow or another, I found David Duke's channel and then I watched his videos. And then that really, because he does all kinds of interesting stuff. Like he was talking about, you know, the Jewish mafia and like how the Sicilian mafia wasn't really a big thing, but the Jews who own Hollywood invented the Sicilian mafia to cover up the Jewish mafia. And he talked about, you know, white slavery in the Ottoman Empire and things like that. And his videos really made it sink down, really made it sink in. And then I got red pilled by the Daily Stormer and I basically became a Daily Stormer fanatic. So that's my path. And I'm just saying that because, well, because you asked, but also because as we're talking about the alt-right, there are a lot of people who are kind of poo-hooing the alt-right or poo-hooing the internet and saying like, oh, you know, we need to get onto the, into meat space and we need to do, you know, real life physical activism, not just talking on the internet. But I mean, I'm just sitting here as a personal example. I was completely 100% red-pilled and radicalized by the internet without any contact, any physical contact at all with any white nationalist. The first white nationalist I met was Jez Turner in London. And I ended up meeting him just because somebody recommended it on the Daily Stormer forum. So the internet works, definitely, 100%. Obviously, at some point in the future, we're going to have to come off the internet and mobilize physically. But when you're winning in a particular area or you're winning in a certain thing, you don't want to stop winning at that thing. So we need to just keep winning on the internet, keep making memes, keep making YouTube videos and so on and so on. Because the alt-right is basically an internet phenomenon. I mean, of course, there are some people who are doing activism like that Matt Heimbach guy who I don't really know so much about him. I know that you do. But it is primarily seems to be an internet thing because it's all about memes and it's all about Pepe and it's all about trolling people on Twitter and et cetera, et cetera. Great victory. And as far as the Hailgate thing goes with Richard Spencer, I just think, I mean, a lot of people criticized him for it. I think it was fantastic. I thought it was like the best thing ever. Yeah. People are complaining like, oh, you can't do that. It's you're misrepresenting us and you're making us look like Nazi. I mean, it's just like, come on, for God's sake. When are you going to grow a pair of balls? I mean, really, like, what is wrong with it? This is, it's just cowardice, basically. It's cowardice. I think it's a case of being ashamed of what you are. We really need to just claim our heritage and claim the whole Nazi thing as our heritage and the Roman salute as our heritage. And if people are going to call us evil Nazis for doing it, then, you know, so what? Call us what you like. We should not be ashamed of this kind of thing. And to back off and apologize and to get snarky about it, like, no, it's just pathetic.
You know, I think the people that complained about that were people that just didn't get the joke. You know, they just didn't understand it. You know, I mean, a lot of the National Socialist side of it is ironic. You know, and I mean, giving the Roman salute is about, you know, it's the most offensive thing you can do to normie society is to do that. So, I mean, people that probably don't know anything about National Socialism would do something like that. You know, youngsters would do something like that just to have a bit of a laugh. And I think it just shows how disconnected some people are to be criticizing that. And I was very surprised at some of the people that didn't approve of it and said, oh, the alt-right is all finished because of this. Because doing something like that, you know, that encourages young people, that they see it. They see that it's edgy. They see the effect that it has had on the people who they resent, the establishment. They see that the establishment freaks out over it and they become attracted to it. And I think what you're saying there about it being online, you know, it's the same for me. I mean, I became radicalized with what I'd read online and read in books before I'd actually met any other nationalists. You know, I think that's the same for the majority of people. And this is the most effective way, you know, to reach people is online because we're changing, you know, the average what's the word for it to describe it? You know, we're changing the way people think, the way that they look at the world, because they look at the, they look online, they look at the news reports or what have you, they look at the comment section, they hear in the comment section criticizing of the Holocaust, saying that didn't really happen, pointing out the Jews that are involved in this, pointing out the black on white crime. And then they think, ah, well, I hadn't actually thought about that before. And then they go looking for information on it. They come across American Renaissance, or they come across Richard Spencer's site, and they think, well, hang on a minute, these aren't idiots. These aren't these idiots that the mainstream media is telling me that nationalists are. These aren't thugs. What they're actually talking about is very sensible, and they're also very intelligent. And then you see in the comment section of American Renaissance or Radix, you see the Daily Stormer linked in there. And then people go to the Daily Stormer and they see the humorous side of it, and they see the really insightful analysis of what's going on that points out how many Jews there are involved in things, that points out the role that feminism has to play in all of this, and how by elevating the female to above the male, we basically put ourselves in this position where we have leaders like Theresa May, like Merkel in Germany, that are doing these terrible things to our countries because they think emotionally, not logically. And all of this has sort of come together under the alt-right, the manosphere, the nationalism, the anti-feminism. Even some of the, you know, the conspiracy side of looking at things through the hangers-on, the InfoWars, and the people from there. And they all come to nationalism, and they all come under this umbrella of alt-right. And I just see it moving further to the right, further towards radicalism in 2017, as people become disillusioned with the alt-light, as it were. I mean, this incident that's happening just at the moment with this deplorable, where they're getting rid of people that speak up about the Jewish question. I mean, that is basically going to make them look so ridiculous. I mean, people are just going to say, well, why, you know, why are you avoiding the Jewish question? You know, if you're talking about race, aren't they a race? Aren't they playing a large role in actually doing this to ourselves? Because if you don't bring the Jews into it, you just think that white people have suddenly become suicidal and decided to attack themselves for some reason. We don't know what the reason is. You know, it doesn't make sense, does it, unless you include the Jewish question?
No, it doesn't. No. I think Mike Cernovich is a Jew. I mean, I always thought
he looks it.
Apparently there are... He does look it. I mean, he came out on Twitter and said he's a Jew. I mean, I remember... I actually brought his book. I've got to admit this now. But when I was into the manosphere, I brought his book. It's called Guerrilla Mindset. And it was kind of okay. It's a bit of a short book. But I brought his book and I was getting into his stuff, and then I was getting red pilled, and then I just typed in Mike Cernovich Jew into Google, and it's right there on Twitter. He's like blasting some guy saying, I'm a Jew. Jews are the best. Jews conquered everybody and da 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 da. So I don't know why there's this confusion about his Jewishness. He seems pretty straightforward Jew to me, and I was kind of surprised that people were kind of accepting him in the Trump election. But I guess he did some good work in the Trump election, and there was kind of a coalition at that time, because it was all, you know, we all joined together to just try to get Trump across the finishing line. But now that that's happened, it's now it's time to like get rid of all the losers, you know. And yeah, you're right, the combination of the Hailgate and the deplorable fiasco has basically kicked off all of these clingers on that have been trying to get their teeth into the alt-right. And this obviously has been a fight which has been going on all the way through 2016. So it's a great way to end the year, because the 2016 was basically the year. I mean, we're going to look back in history. We're going to see 2016 as the year that the alt-right established itself. This is the year that Clinton came out and made her speech. I mean, she basically made it for us. Thank you very much, Hillary Clinton. And then, even when she says it, even when she was standing there, she's like, the alt-right. As soon as she said it, some guy in the crowd shouted out Pepe. I mean, it's just like, yeah. That was probably like one of my favorite moments, 2016. Pepe. It was just brilliant. And then, anyway, and then you got this Milo idiot trying to jump on the bandwagon, and you've got this whole fight going on, and Andrew Anglin was obviously getting really, really pissed off about it, and people trying to take over the label, and it was going back and forth. With Hailgate and with the deplorable thing, it's done and dusted. The alt-right is now pretty firmly confirmed in everybody's mind as a, you know, white nationalist, anti-Semitic movement. There's not really, especially, I another nail in the coffin was this, the ADL came out and said that Pepe's a hate speech icon, or whatever it is they classified
him. A hate symbol. Yeah.
A hate symbol, that's it. I don't know. Some people said they kind of withdrew that, or I don't know, but they said it, and they said it. It's there, right? So everybody knows it. And Pepe is the mascot of the alt-right. So that's it. It's done. We are mainstream. We are now part of people's, you know, people that are into politics know who we are. So, it's a big step.
And obviously, the Jews and the left are going to try and co-opt it. This is, you know, who I forget his name here. Not that Mike Cernovich, but you've got Mike Cernovich, you've got Milo, and Gavin McGuinness as well. You've got all three of them that they try to promote as being leaders of the movement, and all three of them, their credibility is completely shot by the fact that they cover things up, and all three of them are involved with non-white races, with, you know, they've got Chinese wives or brown girlfriends. And how can you say that you're standing up for your race, you're standing up for white people, advocating for white people, when, you know, you're cohabiting with somebody that isn't white? You know, you're committing the ultimate treason against your race and defiling your bloodline in producing monkeys. You know, how can they say they stand up for white people? I don't understand that. This Cernovich character, and when you look at a picture of him, and when I was always taught, you know, be very wary of people whose eyes are too close together. Never trust anyone whose eyes are too close together.
Oh, I thought it was if their eyes were too far apart, but anyway.
That as well, I think.
Yeah.
Both of them show signs of inbreeding, don't they?
Yeah.
They do. You only have to look at the Pakistanis. So just looking at these Turks, I was just thinking today with this... we hadn't really gone very far into the new year before we had the first Muslim atrocity in Turkey. Literally, within the first hour of 2017, Santa Claus had shot up a nightclub in Turkey. But all these Turks that I've been seeing on the news today, they're all mourning their dead or what have you. Not one of them looks like the others. They're all asymmetrical, odd-looking creatures that you really couldn't say what nationality they were. Just a jumbled up mix of different races around the world. No cohesion whatsoever. No Turkish look. You know, that looks like a Turk. I mean, you could look at a Latvian, you could say that looks like a Latvian. You could look at a Scot or a Cornishman, say that looks like a Scot, that looks like a Cornishman. But a Turk, you know, they don't have a defining look, because they're this mongrel race, these mongrel peoples. And that's the way that the world is heading if people don't listen to us and don't start preserving the white race and standing up for us and advocating for us. So how anyone that can have a non-white wife or a non-white girlfriend can claim to be speaking for the alt-right, you know, they're just a fraud. And this is why the Jews promote them. They want to promote these people because then the people that support them lose all credibility. And they know that they're not going to go far enough. They're not going to talk about the white genocide issue because they know that it's going to offend their wife or it's going to make them look bad. So it waters things down, it dilutes things down, and then they're hoping that it will eventually go away. So, you know, obviously this is not what we're going to see, because the alt-right is not going to go away. We've got articulate people that stick to their principles, like Andrew Anglin, who stuck to his principles right the way through this. And the Daily Stormer is the most viewed alt-right website in the world. So you've got the people that have criticized the Roman salute, saying, you know, this isn't going to appeal to people, but their websites nobody even bothers to look at. But the Daily Stormer gets more views than anyone else. So obviously, you know, the tactics that Andrew Anglin has used are successful, and the tactics of the people that have criticized the Roman salute have not been successful in any way. And 2016 saw nationalism reinvigorated with youth. You know, the alt-right is mainly made up of people that are under 30. You know, a lot of people that are under the age of under the age of 20. I mean, the Daily Stormer went on a big drive to get under 18-year-olds involved. You know, if you think when you were
Pokemon thing.
Yeah, yeah. You think when you were a kid, if someone had actually told you about nationalist principles, so many young people could have not made, you know, mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes when I was young, and if I'd known about nationalist principles, I may not have gone down that path. You know, so people might say, "Oh, well, that's extreme." You know, you can't be talking about niggers and kikes and queers to young people, but you know, I think you should, because, you know, then they're going to realize that, because they want to rebel anyway, and they're going to realize that to really rebel, they want to be rebelling against political correctness, and they want to be taking a stand for their race, and they want to be virtuous. Because young people, they have a drive to be virtuous, you know, especially really young children. You know, I mean, children are really virtuous. They always want to do the right thing, and that you know, that doesn't leave you until you're well into your 20s. So if you can capitalize on that, tell young people, look, you can rebel and you can be doing what's virtuous and right at the same time. And that is really going to encourage people to be a part of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, on the subject of the youth, I think there's this whole teenage angst thing, which is just, you know, promoted even by the mainstream. But I think it's actually a real thing, because what happens is you have a certain level of childhood innocence, and then you hit puberty, and then you kind of dumped into the adult world, and it just kind of hits you that this is all messed up, because you have these emotions which are pushing you in a certain direction, but society isn't facilitating those emotions, and you end up all depressed and angry and messed. I mean, I was really not a very happy teenager, and so yeah, these are definitely the people that we need to capture. Andrew Anglin is absolutely right. It's like, who cares about trying to talk to baby boomers and so on and so forth? I mean, who cares about trying to change those guys? Because those guys are going to be dead in 10, 20 years. If you want to change society, you have to take the youth. And that's what he's doing. I mean, that's why I think he's probably the most important white nationalist on the planet. I mean, he's been incredibly successful. And actually, I would say another one of the high points for me for 2016 was the podcast between him and Richard Spencer. I mean, that really made me happy just to see that. Who was the other guy? Mike Enoch as well.
Yeah,
I
don't that really... was good to see. Yeah, very
yeah,
good
that
to
really
see.
Made me happy. That was like a big kind of healing moment. I guess that sounds a bit hippie-ish, but you know what I mean. Just to see those two guys get together and communicate with each other. And because previously, like you were saying before, I was a bit, you know, suspicious about this Richard Spencer guy. I thought he was a bit wimpy, not hardcore enough. But no, he's talking to Andrew Anglin. And I think people are starting to get it, you know, because Andrew Anglin and the whole Daily Storm, it's obviously basically based on Saul Alinsky's tactics of mocking your enemy and using humor and attacking your enemy and creating a drama. So you create this whole energy. And so he's using a lot of tactics which white nationalists haven't been using for the last 70 years. And people haven't really been understanding it. But I think that's, especially with that interview, I think people are starting to get it now. And they're starting to realize that, oh, yeah, this is actually like the real deal. This is actually a good thing. And the more that his philosophy starts to get accepted, the more we're going to progress. So that, yeah, that was good. And yeah, he's taken the youth, young men, high testosterone, pumped up, ready to take on the world. They're not just dry old intellectuals who are into history and stuff like that. These guys are like, yeah, let's do it. You know, and they'll do the Roman salute and the Sieg Heil, and they don't care. It's fantastic. And yeah, I mean, just reading the Stormer today, Anglin posted some video of some Australian guys, like some just bewildered looking Australian hippie type guys, like sitting there drinking cans of beer, and he's got his Trump hat on, you know. And Andrew Anglin made the point in the comment section. He said, look, basically there's a whole generation now of Trump bros who are just They're just on the verge. They're just on the verge of getting red-pilled. So I'm really looking forward to 2017. Bring it on.
Yeah, with the humour there that you were talking about there, this is the double-sidedness, the two-sidedness of everything, because with the humour, we're not doing anything different to the humour that you see in Charlie Hebdo and the mocking of white people, and the mocking especially of white heterosexual men. So all you're doing is you're mocking homosexuals, or you're mocking Negroes, or you're mocking Jews. And the fact that people get so excited about that and angry about it and try to imprison people, I mean, that shows you these double standards. So as well as it being funny, it highlights, you know, the fact that yes, this is true. We are the ones, we are the oppressed minority, not the people of colour that make up, you know, 80% of the world, 70-80% of the world. It's us whites. We're the ones that are the oppressed minority. With the young people that you get involved, I think this was a large reason for this fear that the government had of national action, because you're talking about all people that are under the age of 25. And they're going out on camps. They're doing, you know, good things for young people. Young people should be going out camping around Britain and bonding, you know, and learning about history, learning about their culture. So, and this wasn't organized by the scouts or anything linked up with the government. This was young people going out and doing it for themselves. So of course the government are terrified of it, because they can't get it. They can't get a grip on it. They can't get involved in it. If they tried to infiltrate a group like National Action, they're not going to be able to, because they haven't got secret police operatives that are 18 years old. You know, they're all too old to get involved in it. So they couldn't infiltrate a group like National Action and take control of it and find and gather intelligence from it to feed back to the intelligence services. That just could not be done with a group like National Action. And I think that must have played a large part in the reason for them getting banned, is that there was no way they could, there's no way that the government could benefit in any way from it. Because if they can infiltrate an organization, then they can leave that organization going, because they can gather intelligence on the people that are involved in it. And through the people that are involved in it, they can gather intelligence on other groups. But if there's no way in for them to actually get into that organization, there's no way for them to know what's going on. Because, you know, the government, the police, they don't believe what they read. You know, they always investigate people. People say, well, why didn't you ask me about this? I could have told you this. The police don't want you to tell them about it. They want to investigate you and find it out for themselves. And with a group like National Action, they couldn't do that. They couldn't join the group and find out about them from the inside. The only way they could learn about them is from reading the stuff online. And of course, they paid no attention to that. You know, I mean, that made it quite clear that they were a peaceful protest group that were not interested in terrorist activity. But they completely ignored all of that and then just put forward this, they're homophobic, they're racists, they're Nazis, so we must ban them all for being terrorists. But, you know, what they were saying isn't that different to other people. I think that was the reason, is because they couldn't infiltrate it. They couldn't have a say in what was going on within that group. So of course it terrified them and they wanted to ban them. But now that they've got rid of them, that's not going to change the ideals that those young people had. You know, they're all still going to be just as idealistic as they were. You know, they'll just go on to form another organization or join some of the existing organizations and invigorate them, you know, with their youthful vigor, basically. That's what I hope to see from that. But you've got youth organizations that are springing up all over the place, you know, in America, Latvia, Lithuania, France, all over the place. You've got these young nationalists that are going out there and doing things. And for everyone that goes out there and does a protest, there's got to be 100 that are behind, that are still, you know, learning from what they're seeing on the internet. You know, it got to be. When you think about it, if you think how long it took you before you went out and actually met Jez, how long you were, you know, just discovering this stuff online, you know, there must be so many other people like you. And when you think about the comments that people put online, I bet there's only about 1 in 100 people that actually comment. You know, you think of the actual amount of views that the Daily Stormer gets, and then you look at the comments, I bet it's only about 1%. of the people that actually read it. Because a lot of people, you know, if you're over 30, you weren't taught to type at school. So, you may not know how to do it. You can type a little bit in and click around and surf. But as far as communicating with people, you know, that would be quite a challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah. We have to understand that the red pill takes time to swallow. And, this is like I was saying before, people that criticize the alt-right and they say, oh, well, it's just on the internet. I mean, we have to understand that it does take probably about a year to really like let this stuff sink in. I mean, that's how long it took for me. And I was already into conspiracy theory and all that kind of stuff. But it probably is going to take at least 6 months or probably a year for the information to really sink in. I mean, we've been so heavily indoctrinated for years. It's not like you just, you know, you look at the Daily Stormer one day and then all of a sudden you realize what's going on. It takes a little while to desensitize yourself to the information and to digest the red pill. So there's probably going to be kind of like a year-long lag, I don't know, between people discovering the alt-right on the internet and then people actually getting involved in it, like in physical space. So that has to be understood. So we can't just be, pessimistic.
Well, that bodes really well, doesn't it? That bodes really well for 2017.
Oh, yeah.
You think of all the people have been exposed to this information through the alt-right label in 2016, and they're not going to be going out to meeting other nationalists until 2017, 2018. You know, there should be a massive influx of people into the organizations like the Traditionalist Worker Party in America. You know,
yeah,
I can see them
absolutely. And I mean, another point I'd like to make is that you have to understand we have the truth on our side. This is a point which I really want to push forward. It's like the Jews, they have lies on their side. They've got money. That's their strength. The Jews' strength is money. I mean, it's right there in the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. They basically say, we've got the gold. So they got the gold, and because they got the gold, they buy the political system and they buy the media system. And when they got the media, they just push forward these lies, right? So the money is their strength, but the lies is that the truth is their weakness, because their philosophy is built on lies. It's against God and it's against the natural order of things. Now, white nationalists, on the other hand, we've got no money at all, right? We're all dead broke, but we have the truth on our side, and the truth is more powerful, because like ordinary people, like you can go along with the lies if that's all you've known. Like if all you've ever absorbed is just like liberal media, then you're just going to think, well, this is the way the world is and this is the truth, and you'll go along with it. But once you've seen the truth, once you've been red-pilled, there's no going back. That's it. You're done for life. You know, that's where the term comes from. It comes from the Matrix, isn't it? Once you've seen through the Matrix, there's no going back. I mean, you might not like it. You might like think, oh my God, it's horrible. And some people actually do get a bit upset. I mean, what's her name? Lana Lekhov, the Red Ice Lady. She was talking about, she knows people who've had panic attacks and things like that. Some people, they find it a little bit difficult to digest the red pill. But the fact of the matter is, once you've taken that red pill, you're done for life. There's no going back, mate. You might be, you might not be politically active for your entire life, but you will be there waiting in the reserves to strike when the time is right. So this is this is our greatest strength, really. And, every person that we bring on board, we've basically made a lifelong member.
I think faith has a role to play in that as well. You know, you're saying that some people have panic attacks and get worried. You know, if people have got a faith and they've got a faith in God, then, you know, that helps to have the strength to confront these issues. You know, they can look into the face of darkness and evil and face it down and not let it get to them, because they've got a faith and they know that, this is will all be gone in the blink of an eye when you think of eternity and how long that is outside of time. You know, what we see here, this evil that we see here may seem evil to us now, but that's only because we're mortal. We're living in a mortal timeline. We know that, bad things happen. They may appear to be really evil when you're looking at things from the micro level, but from the macro level, all things work together to serve the good. You know, and if you know that because you have a faith, then that helps to have the strength to, you know, to see all this stuff and to not let it get you down. Now, obviously, you still get angry, but, I don't let it really get to me. You know, it doesn't depress me. You know, I can hear all these terrible things that go on, but it doesn't depress me. And I know that I'm doing something about it, and I know that I'm doing the right thing with what I'm doing with these podcasts, what we're doing now, Subal. You know, you have this faith and you know that we're doing the right thing and we're helping people, you know, people like ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like, yeah, definitely without faith, I don't know, it must be kind of difficult. I mean, also, I think there's definitely an inclination that you kind of, well, I personally felt this, that you kind of have to say something, you know, you just have to do it because otherwise you're just going crazy. You know, it's just like it all boils up inside and you're just like, I've got to say something, I've got to do something. And personally, I feel... I would say I've never been more focused in my entire life. I've never been more focused than I have been in the last 6 months since I started making these videos. It's just like 100%. Yes, this is what I must do. I mean, basically, as far as I see it, we've got a 4-year window now that Trump's been elected, to really make a mark, to really push forwards and, get this thing done. And, I'm a great believer in, what's that book called? Sun Tzu's The Art of War, you know?
And, yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't read it. I haven't actually read it myself, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, it's the famous strategy book, isn't it? But it's a shame, actually, because I was thinking about it the other day, because I was thinking about making a video about it, and I'm thinking, why is it the only strategy book that I know is a book written by a Chinese guy? You know, why don't I know... I'm sure Napoleon must have written something. But anyway, that's the one that everybody quotes for military strategy.
How do we know he's Chinese? How do we know he's Chinese? I mean, isn't it a couple of thousand years old?
Sun Tzu. Well, I mean, it's from China, so I don't know.
No, but China had white people in it. It's only recently that there's not been white people there. If you look at the people that brought Buddhism in, they were white people, blue-eyed with red hair. You know, 2,000 years ago, China had, you know, quite a lot of white people in it. Japan had white people in it, the Ainu, up until last century when they were eventually blended out. You know, he could conceivably have been white. He would obviously be portrayed as Chinese now because China, you know, takes him as part of their heritage. But back then, he might well have been white.
Right.
Just something to think
about.
Well,
yeah, I mean, no, that's interesting. Somebody was just commenting on one of my videos talking about that, actually. I mean, I'd have to study more to understand all that. I mean, there are stories about that kind of stuff. But anyway, the point I was trying to make, Sun Tzu, he says, if you want to inspire people to fight, right, don't tell them that it's going to be a really long war and a really long struggle. Tell them it's going to be quick, right? Tell your soldiers, you know, 2-3 months, boom, we're going to win it, and then we're going to go home. Because ordinary people aren't inspired for a long fight. And So, first, from a propaganda point of view, we could push that. But I actually believe it's possible. I mean, revolutions can happen faster than you think. You know, once the fire catches and it's you know, it's going everywhere and people start to the problem and getting red pilled, we could see massive changes within the next 4 years. So basically, yeah, just to finish that point about, you know, making a YouTube channel and, you know, feeling like you have to speak the truth and doing it because of, you know, like a divine inspiration or whatever, just an inspiration coming from inside. You know, if anybody's listening to this and they're thinking, should I get involved? Should I, you know, now is the time to fight. Now is the time. We've got 4 years. Now is the time to strike. Whatever it is you're planning to do, now is the time to do it, and we can win this battle within a year, within 2 years, within 3 years, by the end of the Trump administration. I mean, also, another point, because we've been talking about the alt-right, another point you've got to notice, all these alt-light guys like Paul Joseph Watson, Mike Cernovich, Milo, Alex Jones, right? All these guys, none of them are talking about Pizzagate. They're all refusing to do it. And this is, for me, this is really my hope, because it's there. And if that thing explodes when Trump becomes president and they really start investigating it, that could really be the fire. That would just tear through the Democrats, tear through the establishment. And it would ignite such a rage within the masses. And we've seen throughout history over and over again, this is one of the reasons that Jews get kicked out of the country, actually. It's the blood libel. People like tolerate them up to a point, and then they start finding out that Jews have been, you know, torturing and killing small children, and then they get really pissed off and they throw them out of the country. So I've got big hopes for Pizzagate in 2017. And yeah, let's see what happens.
Well, it will tear through the alt-light as well, because they haven't been covering it.
Yeah.
Know, that will expose them as being shills for not covering it. I mean, that blood libel thing, the phrase itself, blood libel, when has it ever been proved to be a libel? Mm. You know, these cases were heard in the highest courts of the land. The Jews themselves had the best lawyers in the land. They had the king behind them, because they were the king's Jews, and yet they were still found guilty. You know, they were not found innocent. It's not a libel. It's not like people are saying that the Jews are guilty of this when they were found innocent. The Jews were found guilty of it. You know, it's never been proved to be a libel anywhere. And yet this phrase, blood libel, seems to have entered our language when talking about this. And I don't understand why. And I don't understand why nobody brings that up when they say this. Because people should do. You say it's a blood libel. Right, well, where was the case? Where was the libel case held then? Which particular child that was crucified and drained of his blood, which particular one were the Jews actually found innocent then? Because they weren't. And these countless cases, countless children that were made into saints after this horrific torture happened to them, that were actually made into saints. And yet the Jews seem to get away with it now by just saying it was a libel. But there's no evidence to show that. I know they've removed. Go on.
I mean, sorry. Yeah, I just say it's, I just call it that because it just makes it easier to Google it. That's the reason. I mean, because that's what will lead you to the Wikipedia page on it or whatever. But I'm a great fan of just embracing the pejoratives and the insults that the left, you know, throw at us. So I will... You know, I'm proud to call myself a racist and a sexist and homophobic, even though phobic, you know, it's a rational fear, isn't it? But anyway, I'm a homophobic and I'm a, what's the other one? Islamophobic, anti-Semite, Nazi, white nationalist, white supremacist. And I believe in blood libel and Holocaust denial and conspiracy theories. Well, I think there's probably more things I could add onto that. Oh, transphobic. There's one. Yeah, I've got an irrational fear of transsexual people.
Well, this was the other thing as well, wasn't it? With the rise of the alt-right and with Donald Trump, these politically correct terms ceased to have the effect that they once had. You know, they called Donald Trump all the names they could think of, all these phobic names, and he still won. You know, these names lost their magic. They lost the power that they once had to shut down all debate, and they failed. And now they don't know what else to do, because they don't have anything else in their arsenal. That's all they have, is calling us names and trying to silence us. And if that fails, locking us up for using naughty words. And they can't lock everyone up. And the more people they do lock up just for using phrases that they don't like, non-politically correct phrases, the more the people on the left, they're going to question, you know, why it is that they are supporting the left, because they obviously don't agree with free speech. And it's all these liberals that talk about free speech all the time, about how important free speech is. And yet free speech, in the case of nationalists, we don't have any free speech. You know, we're told we're terrorists for using the speech that we do, or national action work. Purely just for the words that they used, they were described as terrorists. So the more the left hears about that, the more they see, you know, the mainstream media crowing about the latest young lad that's been locked up in prison for using the word nigger, the more the left are going to come to our side. I mean, just last month, or just in the last couple of weeks, really, there was some young lad that was given 12 months for putting bacon on the door of a mosque, and he died in prison.
No, he was murdered in prison.
Yeah, well, they won't say what happened to him, will they?
Yeah.
The prison authorities won't say how he died. So you might well be right there. But that's horrific.
He accidentally slipped on a bar of soap or something, didn't he?
Just for putting a bit of bacon on a mosque door. And again, that shows you there's this double standard. You know, if that bacon was to be dropped on the pavement or dropped outside hanging on somebody's door, that wouldn't be a crime. But because it's on a mosque, because it's on a Muslim door, it's considered a crime. So where's the equality in the eyes of the law there? There isn't any. You've got a privileged group that have been given extra special privileges above everybody else, haven't you?
Yeah, I think this is how we're going to progress in 2017. Is just we're going to really hack into that classical libertarian, moderate conservative middle ground, and we're going to bring these people over to our side, because ultimately their arguments don't add up. I don't think we're going to convert the extreme left, because they're too far gone and they're too brainwashed dead, and well, that's where the Jews are anyway. But the center, you know, there's that famous quote, isn't there, the center will never hold. Well, it's not going to hold anymore. And we need to, I know I keep saying this every podcast, but we need to attack these guys, and we are attacking these guys. And these classical libertarians, just like, you know, prod them, and it's like, come on, mate, yeah, talk about the Jews. I actually really appreciate what Millennial Woes is doing with his interviews. He's done like 25 interviews in the last 2-3 weeks or something. But he's talking to lots of different people. Some of them, like Black Pigeon Speaks and Sargon of Akkad, are quite moderate. But by reaching out to these people and talking to them, he's like, you know, he's engaging them in discussion, and he's saying, look, we're not crazy people. We've got reasonable ideas. And, you know, this is where it's at. So we're opening the door to these people, because actually it's only white people that believe in this classical libertarian stuff anyway. Like all the brown skinned people, they'll just bow down to communism or whatever. They don't really care, you know. They don't really have that higher moral integrity, because classical libertarianism is very much, it's very much has a set of high ideals, you know. Everybody is equal and we're all egalitarian, and education can save us and we will progress into the future and build a utopia. You know, ordinary brown people don't have that kind of mentality. They just have the kind of mentality of, you know, let's create a huge welfare state and give me money. So white people on this middle ground, classical libertarian ground, that's what we need to attack. We need to both attack these people. You know, we need to do like the good cop, bad cop combination. You know, like Millennial Woes, he can be the good cop, and some other people, they can play the bad cop. And we just need to coax them, or at least coax their followers into our side. And that process is already going on, and I think it will continue in 2017. And eventually these people will realize that there is no center ground. You can't really get attacked from both sides, if you know what I mean. Like someone like Sargon of Akkad, he's like attacking all the crazy communists and social justice warriors. If he finds out he's getting attacked from the right at the same time, it's like, where's he?
Well, he is. I that's Sargon. I mean, he's a partial Negro. I don't really see the point in trying to convert people that aren't white. I don't really like that Sargon character very much, and I think, you know, his actual genetics show very much in the way that he is and the arguments that he makes. But I think Millennial Woes does a great job of speaking to people and talking to people that are on the centre and even towards the left. I mean, his views, I share most of his views, You know, he wouldn't say that he was National Socialist, but a lot of his views seem to be in sympathy with National Socialism. But that seems to be an area that he doesn't go towards. But I think he does a great job. But as far as using extremism is concerned, I think that's a really positive thing. And this is another thing that the people that were criticising the Roman salute don't get, is that the more extremist we are and the more noisy we are about it and the more people there are that do that, that just means the less extreme the people on the centre appear. You know, the more extreme the Daily Stormer is, the less extreme people like Britain First appear to people. And the less chance there is of these other groups being seen as being extremist. If you have got real extremists, then, you know, they can't really call groups like UKIP or the Front National, they can't really call them extremist, can they?
Yeah, extremists. It's just a classical jiu-jitsu move where you use the power of the media against itself. I think it was George Lincoln Rockwell, wasn't it, who pioneered this kind of thing with his, you know, walking around with the swastika on Washington. And, you know, he was massively successful. I mean, they had to kill him, basically. They were like, we've got to shoot this guy. We can't just, you know, we can't let him get away with this stuff. But yeah, I think it kind of also comes down to a matter of courage, really. I think it's like, do you have the courage to raise the swastika with pride? Because everybody knows what it means. You know, you don't have to explain yourself once you do the Roman salute, or once you do, you know, once you put a swastika out there. I mean, everybody knows it means you're pro-white and you don't like the Jews, and that's it. And if you try and apologize or escape from it, or say it's a joke, or say it's ironic, or say it's this and that, it's like, yeah, whatever, mate. I mean, this is one thing, actually, the Jews are right when they say, you know, this is where it's leading, because they know exactly where it's leading. You start letting people get away with doing that Roman salute, then, you know, in a couple of years' time, they're going to be Nazis. So I think it's a matter of, when will the white man just have the courage? When will we have the courage to raise the swastika again and to do the Roman salute or the Sikh Heil or whatever you want to call it? And and it's a jiu-jitsu move. They can't, there's just no, you've trapped them in, I think the term is it's called a double bind, where there's either direction they lose. For example, you take the Hail Gate, okay? If the media had refused to cover it, like make the big deal out of it, then what they're doing is they're effectively allowing it to be normalized. And if they allow it to be normalized, they're finished, because everyone will just start doing, you know, the Roman salute, and then they'll all become Nazis, and they can't let that happen. So they are forced to attack. But when they're forced to attack, they're forced to attack by giving that thing lots and lots of publicity. And that just makes it more popular. I mean, it's bad publicity, or they try and put a bad spin on it, but the message gets through. Because you don't, everybody knows what it means, right? They can spin it as much as they like. People know what it means. The message gets through. So by doing that kind of, by using the swastika and by doing the Roman salute, you are forcing the media to attack you, and you are forcing them to give you publicity, and you are making yourself famous. And it is the winning tactic. And I'm just bashing my head against the wall. I can't understand why people don't see this, but, you know, there it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it. When you look at it like that, you know, there's no way that the other side can win. You know, now that we've got big enough that they have to cover incidents like that when it happens, it just brings more people to our side. You know, there is no bad publicity. You know, all publicity is good publicity, especially as far as nationalism is concerned. They've got no other response to it. You know, this is why they're clamping down so hard on groups like National Action and the nationalists in Britain, because they really are backed into a corner. You know, their backs are up against the wall, and they're just lashing out like a wounded animal, a cornered animal that's making, you know, its last desperate bid to escape. And it's not going to escape. I think 2017 is going to be a massive year for us. I mean, it started with terrorism already. We had terrorism in December. you know, with this truck running people over. And as I say, straight away into 2017, we've got terrorism in Turkey. We're just going to see more and more terrorism. And we're going to see more of these refugees that Merkel brought in turning against the German people. And every time that happens, you know, more people move to our side. The Alternative for Deutschland party, they've doubled the amount of people supporting them last year. If they double it, if they manage to double again in the next 6 months, they could win the German election. So all we have to do is just rely on the Muslims to keep being Muslims, and all white people are going to become nationalists. It's just a matter of how much time it takes. And I think with when people start to see the positive results of having a right-wing president in America, once people start seeing these results, you're then going to start seeing more governments moving towards the right wing in Britain. I mean, already I think the stock market or the Dow Jones index is up to the highest it's ever been because they know that Donald Trump is now going to be the president. So that's already boding well for America. Once we see the results of his presidency, once America does start being great again, the rest of the world is going to want that too. And we're going to start seeing that in Europe. And I think we've got the first chances of that happening will be in this year with the German election, the Dutch election, the French election. And I think we're probably going to see an Austrian election as well. You know, we may have thought, well, it's not good that Norbert Höfer didn't get in as the president, but it's more important that the party actually gets into government, and they have a chance to do that this year. So if the Muslims keep behaving like Muslims, if the Jews keep behaving like Jews and trying to clamp down and being politically correct, then we can't lose. That's the way I see it. We can't lose in 2017. I don't know if you've got anything you'd like to add to that before we finish, Subal?
Oh, yeah, no. Well, I share the same positive opinion. I guess we've got 20th of January he comes in, doesn't it? So we've got 18 yeah. days, see if they assassinate him. But yeah, if he gets in, just to end it, I mean, a lot of people are saying that they're disappointed with Donald Trump. I mean, you just got to be honest. Nobody knows what is going to happen. We are just not in a position to judge him at this point. We'll only be able to judge him really 6 months in, or even at the end of 2017. That's the time that we'll really know who he is and what kind of man he is, because he may just be, you know, putting these Jews on his cabinet and this, because the Jews are really powerful. I mean, it's like, these people aren't messing around. They'll poison him. They'll murder him. They'll kill his whole family. He knows that. So hopefully he's just planning. I mean, you can't do politics without getting into bed with these people. So if I was Donald Trump, I'd be putting Jews on my cabinet too, just to, calm them down, to allow me to get into the actual cabinet, you know, allow me to get into the presidency. And then personally, I would first of all make sure I got the military on my side, because you don't know what kind of Jews are up in the high reaches of the military. Get them on your side, get the military on your side, and then you can make a change. Until you've got the military, you just can't really do anything, because, you know, Obama could come out and he could just veto the election, or there could be a military coup or whatever. I mean, these people are crazy. They're wild. They'd do anything. You back people into a corner and they have no choice but to do something radical and extreme. So I'm personally not worried about Donald Trump. Even if he does turn out to be a moderate, I do believe that he believes in freedom of speech, and he will allow the white ring to, I mean, this guy went on TV. He refused to condemn David Duke. I mean, he's like, I don't know who he is. Who's David Duke? I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I mean, that's amazing. Just the fact that he did that. So yeah, don't worry. No, everything's going to be fine. And 2017 is going to be the best year ever.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on once again, Subal. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another SS Britannia. So we'll see you all again then. Happy New Year.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.